Anthony Shannon. What is it that I want to be known for? Wow, that's a deep question. Being a good person, taking care of others.
So if I had a problem as in my business or life, what problem would I have that I would need to call you?
If you're trying to build or scale a marketing agency, that's when you contact our company.
And how would you help me do that?
Umbrella is a platform via which small marketing agencies resell third-party marketing solutions. So let's say you know how to do SEO and PPC, but you don't know how to do Facebook advertising or website building, or you don't have the budget to do sales commitments with technology companies. So you can't get local listings for cheap, or you can't get email marketing for cheap. We bulk buy on behalf of about 2,500 agencies, reduce the wholesale price, and deliver the low wholesale price to small agencies. So kind of like a Sam's Club for marketing agencies from that perspective. And we also know that small marketing agencies don't have a strong brand. So we have a client-facing brand called Umbrella Local that you can co-brand with. It's kind of like a Remax for marketing agencies, if you will.
Okay.
And we also train them and create leads for them. It's kind of the turnkey solution to expand from maybe doing something very specific in marketing or even kickstarting your marketing agency by using one of our programs.
Marketing is such a huge thing. You know, you start doing a bit of social media marketing, but that's not enough. So you then start doing a bit of content marketing. Well, that's not enough.
Right.
And then you get into email marketing. Well, that's still not enough. There's so many pieces.
So many pieces. And I think small businesses today need a trusted advisor. The difference between, you know, some people ask me what's the difference between a marketing advisor or a fractional CMO. Some people use that term to an agency. An agency doesn't only consult, it has implementation, right? It also does what it says you should do, also builds the website. But that's the only difference. I think a business needs a trusted advisor that can take a look at their business, understand their domain, and say, okay, this is your budget, fine, it's limited, so we can't do everything at one time. What's the lowest hanging fruit to get you the best leads that you need? What's missing? So when we start our conversation, we talked a little bit about branding. So obviously, if you have zero differentiation, no USP, zero that makes you special, should start there. Otherwise, all the other processes of bringing traffic to you, we won't be able to create positive ROI. Mm-hmm. So a lot of buckets. I think you need a trusted advisor to tell you this is what you need to do first. So you have $1,000 a month, fine. We'll start with this. Let's reach out to your customers, get some testimonials, let's get you some reviews. Let's build up your value. Let's copyright your website. Let's make sure that you have a USP before we send any traffic to it. Because if we send traffic now, you're just going to lose your money. And it's not going to be Google's fault or Facebook's fault. It's going to be your brand's fault.
You know, people want to spend money on the sexy things like a Facebook ad or things that will turn around an ROI quite rapidly. I'll give you money to run my Facebook ads because I want sales today.
Right.
But you're right. They forget that they actually have to build up their brand first. They have to create those landing pages. They have to create that value. Otherwise, they are wasting their money. But that stuff isn't sexy. It isn't fun. And it takes a lot of labor and time and money.
That's exactly where you need to hire the right people for the job. So if you have a trusted advisor and he knows how to implement those things, whether it's with a company like Umbrella or in-house team that he has or outsourced people that he works with, but he knows how to get that on a lower budget and also do most of the heavy lifting for you. I think that whenever you think about producing results, you need to remember that there are several buckets to the funnel. It starts when people meet your brand. Do they see some sort of uniqueness to actually go ahead and, after awareness, engage with the brand? After the lead is created, does it go through a qualification process? And after the qualification process, do we actually have a good salesperson to talk with them? Because it can break also with the salesperson. It can die there. Right? So the marketing agency can be awesome, and then everything dies down with the salesperson. Or with small businesses, many times it's the business owner, and he's just not around. Like, he's working and heading sales at the same time. So don't do an ad campaign. You're still in referral mode. Mm-hmm. Go network. You're not there. And a good marketing advisor will also tell you, you're not there. Either you hire a salesperson and you go through the other stages, or just keep to referrals. Maybe we get you some reviews so your online presence is a bit more up to date and impressive, but we'll keep it there.
Yeah, everyone wants leads. They get in a panic mode because they don't have a plan and they've got to pay their bills. And they're like, okay, well, I need leads because I need to get work. And yeah. Then they get busy with the work and then the work dries up or their contracts end and they're stuck with no leads again. And then they got to, then they get caught in that. I need to have Facebook leads. I need to pay for Google leads. What should a company do to ensure that they're always kind of getting enough traffic to their site or at least keeping that funnel a little bit full?
I think you stated it at the beginning. I think it's a strategy. You need to take a little bit of time. People always, they take the time to talk with clients, that is obviously important. Take the time to do fulfillment on your services, which is obviously important. You also need to take a little bit of time to think about your business, mm-hmm. which is mandatory. And if you realized that you're not very good at thinking about your business, there are business coaches, maybe a partner, maybe a marketing, trusted marketing advisor who is also a business advisor to an extent because they understand your specific industry. And you need to take the time and think, okay, who are the clients I want to reach? What's my budget? Mm-hmm. How many I want to create? And when do I want to do it? Once you have those four things, then you can start charting out actually how you implement that. Mm-hmm. It's scary. Like you're completely remote from it. You're in HVAC. You've always been in HVAC. You're the best technician and ops manager in the world. But when people talk to you about websites and Facebook ads and pixels, you're like, no, go away. I don't want to talk about it. It sounds horrible to me. Just generate leads for me, like you said. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it goes back to the person who works with you. They need to tell you, give some guidance, not just be, yes, we'll do it. Let's first talk about your strategy. Mm-hmm. We have other buckets than the Facebook ad here. It's strategy, going back to taking the time to strategize.
Well, a lot of times companies will get into that brand awareness part of the funnel, yeah. And then they'll just kind of stay there. And they have no plan to take anyone from brand awareness to interest to decision. It's like they just stay in social media and post in social media and expect that clients are just going to convert there.
It's true. It's because some lack of knowledge. They didn't take the time to understand, and probably nobody explained to them what all these tools do, right? It's a tool set. It's a toolbox. Each thing has its, each item in the toolbox, like a Facebook page is a tool, a website is a tool. But like you said, if you have presence, but you're not sending traffic towards that presence, then it's like having, you know, a store in the middle of the desert. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Nobody's going to see it. And who are you sending posts to if you don't have any fans? And even if you do, you probably have like 2% of them see your post. So you need to boost it. Are you doing that? Do you even know what it means? I think it's very hard for business owners to do their own marketing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, because lack of knowledge, and you need to be a specialist. I'm not going to fix my electricity if there is an issue. I'm not going to touch it. Not just because I'm afraid to die. I wouldn't know what to do, right? I wouldn't know what to do. I don't know where to start. So the same thing with marketing. But moreover, I think it's also you're doing something. Right? You're responsible already for like probably one, two, or three things in your business. You can't take on marketing as well. Somebody needs to be dedicated to it. Mm-hmm. You need to hire somebody who does it. I think people sometimes miss the fact that it's not a cost market. It's an investment. Mm-hmm. But if you do correctly, we'll always have positive ROI. And if you are not doing it correctly, we'll always lose you money.
Well, I think a lot of it too is they listen to these specialist gurus, thought leaders that talk about one aspect of marketing because they're specialists in social media marketing, or they're specialists in email marketing, and that's all they talk about. And that's as far as the business gets.
I agree. Well, we can't blame the specialists, right? That's what they do. They're a social media specialist. They're not maybe not a generalist marketer. That's what they know very well, and they want to get hired. And to some extent, with bigger companies that already have a marketing manager in-house, that's fine. That's the trusted advisor. They're already in-house. They're saying, okay, all I need is this unit. This guy does great as social media. I already have SEO, PPC, websites, trust, funnel, everything is secure. I just need social media. So if you have the marketing array in place in your business, then grabbing in units, specialized units is great. The thing is, when you don't, that becomes an issue.
Well, it's so hard for small businesses. In Canada, we have 80% of our economy is small and medium-sized businesses. We don't have a lot of large corporations in Canada. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of small businesses out there that are just trying to do it all on their own. They get frustrated and they're losing money, or they just don't have the time to figure out how to do this.
Yeah, I think you have to, as part of strategizing.
They need to look at the big picture. They need to understand how all the pieces come together.
Bringing in people to the business, whether it's leads or foot traffic, whether it's an e-commerce store that wants, you know, potential buyers, cost money. It's plain and simple. It's just the way it is. Now, the key here is cost of the acquisition of the client needs to be lower than what you make on it. And that's also a calculation sometimes, because, you know, I love to give the example of Domino's Pizza, where if you order a pizza tray, it's like $10 or $5, mm-hmm. and depending on the specials that they have. But they're investing more than $150 in customer acquisition across the board. And people ask, how come? Because they know that their LTV on the client is $6,000. Taking it from the big world to the small world, it could be an HVAC or a carpet cleaner that says, okay, I'm breaking even on the customer acquisition, maybe not losing, but I'm breaking even on the customer acquisition on the first order, but I know that I can sell to this business or client at least 2 carpet cleanings on average per year. So acquisition is costing me 0 and I'm making 0. And 6 months from now, on my second time cleaning for them, I'm gonna make 100% profit on whatever it is. Businesses don't think that way.
No.
They don't have time, and they also don't have a sales engine for real. Many small businesses depend on referrals, which is not really a sales engine unless you're working at it. And then you can calculate, okay, how much time did I invest going to network meetings? How much did a network meeting cost me? How much is my BNI? How much is my Chamber of Commerce? Okay, I spent $50 an hour on my time. I spent 20 hours last month, you know, going to networking events plus the subscriptions. It's $1,000. Okay, I'm spending $1,000 and I acquire 2 clients, $500. But it's not, that's the issue with referrals. It's you can't scale. Mm-hmm. You need to duplicate yourself.
Well, a lot of small businesses aren't actually businesses. They're just people who are self-employed and who have created a job for themselves.
And I actually think that's fine. That's completely fine. We have an umbrella, a lot of agencies that are those type of people. And they have 10, 12, 15 clients. They make $1,000 a month from each client on average. Great way of living, lifestyle business. I think it's best people make their own decisions. Mm-hmm. But some businesses already have the beginning of an expansion. They hired a couple of employees. They need to get them leads, or need to get them jobs, or need to get them more. It went well for you when you were on yourself, by yourself. And with your referral system, you managed to get more work in than what you could maintain. So you hired a person, but now you're stuck in a loop. You're not really there, not generating enough, and you can't go back. So you know you need to do something to get more business in, but you don't know why, because you never had an engine. It was always referrals. Mm-hmm. And then you need to start learning. So you need to start spending a little bit on advertising and building your funnel. And by, you know, month 6, maybe you'll understand your customer acquisition costs. If you're doing very slowly, obviously you can do it faster if you're working with experts. I think that's definitely the way to go.
When you want to create a business, you need to invest money into that business in order to build it and scale and hire people so that you're selling something and not your time.
Going back to what you said before, some businesses, it's harder for them. For example, my brother-in-law, he's a Chinese medicine doctor. It's not really a doctorate because it's not conventional medicine, but he's very good at what he does. But like a lot of doctors, he's selling his time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. People go to him because he is him. His name is Jonathan. He's very good at what he does, and it's word of mouth. How can he scale? Like, he's selling hours. To scale, and he's thinking about it, he needs to open a clinic, start bringing other people. He needs to become the front man, like in attorney offices, where you have the partner on the front, but actually you're getting the work done by the people in the back that nobody knows. And that's, you know, that requires a huge change for him because he loves working with people. He wants to heal them. He likes working on the case. He doesn't want to manage other people, but he wants to make more money. There is a give and take, I think, in some professions. And for others, it's easier because it's the process is commoditized to begin with.
It does make it extremely difficult to scale when it's all about you, unless you can train a bunch of people to be minions. But that's where agencies come in. When you've got the agency, but we're going to have, other people are going to do the work. We're going to contact somebody like Umbrella to find us people to get the work done.
Yes. So as a business, I would tell you, first off, if what you do is your passion, mm-hmm. you love doing it, maybe that's fine. You know, that's enough. Just make sure you're making more than what you're spending and putting some money aside. And if your business is more productized, like AC installation, then I wouldn't spend 1 minute continuing that business without stopping and strategizing. Mm-hmm. Not 1 minute, because you're losing out. It's a business built for scale.
Yeah, it depends on the business that you have. It sounds like you've always been business-minded, though. Like, you've always had this thing where it drives you to build something bigger than yourself.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy about that the most?
I'm from Israel, and when, at the age of 18, instead of going to college, everybody goes to the military for 3 years. Boy, 3 years, girls, 2 years. We actually go to college after that at the age of 21. When I out of school and out of the military, I was 21 and I started learning for my SATs, but I didn't really, what I wanted, I had a passion to do something. I didn't want to go back to a system and learn for another 4 years and sit in a classroom. I wanted to go out to the world and do something. At that point, I didn't care what. And I met my business partner to be at the SATs. We were studying together and we started talking about something. It was something completely different than what we started at the end, but that kind of ignited. I actually only spent less than 6 months in college. I left at the end of the semester to grow my company. And it was only about proving myself as a young person and doing something and not having the patience to take more time. And today, my thought process is completely different. I have a family. I have kids. I don't feel I need to prove anything to anybody. What drives me is I really like to work with entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. It's extremely interesting for me. I like small businesses. I like to be able to help them. I like the technology piece behind the business because I'm basically a product guy. Those are my drivers.
Why marketing?
Marketing is something I evolved into. It's more marketing tech. When we got started, like I told you, we're a secondary marketing research company, and we're talking about 2002. Online wasn't exactly as usable as it is today. And we actually built data purchase to transmit information to corporates we worked with, not just harvesting data and building research, but also the technology piece of ongoing information distribution to the businesses. My business partner he came from EMC, he's a developer, and we were always product-minded. when we continued and evolving into an agency, when Facebook came along, we started building Facebook applications. I don't know if people hearing this right now know what I'm talking about. But when Facebook got started, to make it usable, you actually had to build application on it, like a coupon application or a sweepstakes application. And actually it was the heydays of Facebook. It was great. But we were always very product oriented. It wasn't the, and we were product in marketing. And that company, we spun it off, we raised money for it, and we turned it into a format was an automated marketing platform for small businesses. It was the first Facebook innovation competition winner ever. Ooh. And it was a tech product in marketing. So the marketing piece is because we developed some sort of domain knowledge. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting for us is how we can solve issues with technology in this ecosystem. When we were starting to sell, one of our resellers was a guy nobody knew. We were looking for big resellers in the company because we had a an automated marketing platform for small businesses, something that cost $200 a month. And to get it into a lot of small businesses, you know, would be very hard. So we tried to close with channel partners like Intuit and GoDaddy and Wix. And along came somebody who nobody knew, but was a referral from our investor. And we didn't give it a lot of, we didn't give him a lot of time. We didn't expect a lot of things from him. And he sold $250,000 in the first week of working with us. You're raising your eyebrows. I was blown away. I'm talking about a period in the company, a time in the company when we were fighting for every sale. Every demo, I was getting on demo calls. That was the time. It wasn't even on when we scaled. I have to know, what is this? So we became friends and later business partners in another business. And his name is Barry Plasko. He's a good friend. And I found out that he had a list of tens of thousands of marketing freelancers that were interested in a forma. And he basically turned our platform into a reseller suite so they can resell umbrella. And that's the way he sold it. And I was blown away. It was basically the gig economy. My first view into the gig economy, at least. And I've been in that gig economy space for the past 7 years.
Well, the gig economy is really an interesting progression of labor. Because before, you know, like when we were born, like when we were little, our parents would go to work and they would get a job and they would stay with that job and kind of move up the ladder. And there was, that was your expectation, was to stay with that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they started losing their jobs when unexpectedly because, well, here in North America, they started downsizing. And there was the big downsizing in the 80s and 90s. Yeah. As they offshored a lot of that work. Now our generation is going, we're really caught in this situation where the gig economy is almost the only option for some people.
I think for some people it's the only option. We see so many people that are out of, some people are pushed into independence. Mm-hmm. We see that they have a lot of trouble going back to work even if they want to. Some people get really tired of the working life as an employee. They want more flexibility. They think they have higher abilities that are not appreciated at the business place. They can do better by themselves, or they don't mind doing less or a bit less, but they want much more flexibility for working from abroad. Like you said, I think when the culture change now also allows it, we're okay with it. Mm-hmm. My parents, when I, my first company, Shark, I had it for 7 years. And when I moved to Forma, which was the automated marketing platform, they told me, what are you doing? And I'm talking about 7 years into it, even though I did a few things in between. I said, guys, enough. Like, I'm dying here. I want to move on to other things. I want to do more interesting things. But what are you doing? You have a good business. And at the time, it was a real thing. Like we had a real discussion and an argument about it. Several went on for a couple of weeks. I didn't have a grown-up argument with my parents to that extent ever. When I was a kid, they were, you know, I did something not wrong, they would yell at me. But as a grown-up, it was really intense because I really felt passionate about the fact that I'm ruining my life and I'm taking a risk. And I was, I'm not going to do this for another 30 years. It's not going to happen. That's like, I'm going. And if it's not this, it's going to be something else. And at least here we have some investors. So maybe this is better. And I think now it's much easier for them to get it. I think they see it more around them. They understand it. They see that it didn't work out so bad for me. And it's also a culture thing. Like you said before, it's the shift in culture. But I also think a lot of high-tech companies helped with that. Mm-hmm. High-tech started offshoring a ton of things, outsourcing a ton of things. And when you outsource, why not outsource to small single proprietors or small businesses? They were doing it, and the big corporations were doing it in Japan for, you know, much before the 80s. Sony was doing it. And I think corporations in the United States started understanding that mechanics as well. And high-tech industry took it very far. And today, even, they're still taking it further because after COVID, a lot of them said to employees, you know what? 2 days from home, 3 days in the office. You're half a freelancer. Like, beside the fact that it's a W-2 and not a 1099, it's really starting to, what is working in the company? It's being in front of Zoom. What does it mean? I'm working from home. I'm in my boxers. I'm not in the company.
Yeah.
I'm home. So I think the lines are really blurry today. They're going to get blurrier.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of layoffs happening in the States right now in tech companies that overhired. They thought their growth was going to continue going. And of course, it slowed down. And they are laying people off. And like Facebook just has a hiring freeze for the first time. And companies have for so long, like since the whole offshoring thing of the 80s, they've not been loyal to their employees. And now the employees are deciding, okay, fine, we're not going to be loyal to you either. We're going to go do this gig economy thing, or we're going to jump from one thing to another. So companies are now saying, well, we can't find good labor. We can't find good people.
Right.
Is that true? Or is it that there are good people out there? They just work differently.
I think from the company's perspective, that's what they see, right? They're putting out a job post and they're not getting enough people. From the employee perspective or the freelancer perspective, like you said, things have changed. Where it used to be a seller's market, now it's a buyer's market, now it's a seller's market, right? Definitely people in development positions have much more power than they used to have. People are really fighting over them. But also the fact that we have a ton of freelancers doesn't mean that we have a ton of quality, right? The fact that you have 5,000 designers on Upwork doesn't mean that there are 5,000 great designers for the budget that you want. If you want somebody who is great for your budget, you really need to work hard finding them. So I think they have something about what they say. And I don't think it's anybody's fault, though. I think it was always meant to go in that progression. Eventually, companies shouldn't have all the power. Employees, or let's say the people who work in the company in any capacity, should have some of the power and some of the distribution of the wealth. And I hope it's going in that direction.
It'll be interesting to see the, you know, with the great resignation that they're having right now, the increase in freelancers, and as a creative, you know, there is so much competition out there. I'm not going to go work on Fiverr. I can't even get on Upworks. And even if I did, I probably would be like, well, I'm not taking that one because it'd be too expensive. Right. So it's hard to find good quality work as a freelancer or creative, as the competition goes global.
That's true. That's a problem. Before that, you had to be the best in Canada, then the best in North America. Now it's the best in the world.
Yeah.
So the competition is is definitely bearing down on you. But I think people
Well, it's not even just the best, because the creative, whether as a writer, designer, whatever it is that you do, you can be really good quality and really good at what you do, but so can the person in India be just as good,
right?
But they can undercut you because it costs more to live in Canada than it does to live in India.
I agree 100%. I think
So it's not even that you have to produce good work. How can freelancers that live in North America or the West afford to be freelancers?
It's a very good question. I think it really depends on, a lot of it depends on what you do. There are some things that are easier to do comparisons in. So I want a front page design for my website. Maybe there are a lot of very talented designers in Eastern Europe or in India that can produce the same quality of work as an American designer, but maybe there is something that they can do. And I think that's the way the freelancer should need to work. Okay, so what can I do that they can't do? Maybe we're the same where it comes to design fulfillment. But maybe we're completely different where it comes to support, because I'm on the same time zone. You can get me on the phone in 2 seconds. I talk with a better accent. I understand the culture. I have things that work for me. Okay, how do I utilize that as a designer? Maybe I tweak my product set a little bit. Maybe it needs to be something that is a monthly package that relates to the design, but also has a lot of account management and support around it, something that people need all the time. Okay, boom, maybe social media management, but social media management in a higher level. So I worked with a lot of freelancers around the world. And when there is a difference between creative and design and creative and copywriting. Copywriting really requires, besides your marketing and copywriting knowledge, which most people do not have those abilities, you need to understand the culture and you need to have a very good grasp of the language. So there are much less Indians, even though they speak English pretty well, but many, the better they speak, that you see the higher the price goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And as an American, you have much higher chances going with something that includes copy and design and maintenance that is done in the same time zone and requires back and forth communication.
Is it one person that can do all of that? Because that's a lot. I mean, I know I can do all of that, but I also know how much effort it takes and how much time it takes for me to write articles, create graphics, do the social media, SEO the website, do something extra special like this podcast and magazine. There is a lot that goes into something like that. And a lot of companies go, well, we can't really, that's kind of still high for all that. And I can piecemeal it over here.
I think you mentioned a few things that are commoditized, on-site SEO or backlinking, which is commoditized. Good content is not commoditized yet, in my opinion, to a level. Well, you can get $12 SEO articles, but they're horrible. I tried it. They're really bad. You're better off using copy AI and just let a machine write it. So
there's another thing.
Well, that's the end of all of us. That's not just creative. That's like, if they can do creative and they can write well, which they're starting to, but it's fine. You know, when machines actually do all the work is probably when we don't need to work at all. Which we're getting close to it.
Well, I'm going to push back a little bit there because, well, being at my parents' house, I have been jumping into the history of this town. My family's been in this town, which, I mean, this is Western Canada, so it's not very long. You know, it's only been just over 100 years. And we were reading up about the mill and everything that they had at the time at the turn of the 20th century. And horses did a lot of the work.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Horses did a ton of the work at the mills until they created machines. And then the horses didn't need to do all that work.
Yeah.
Right? So all of a sudden we didn't need horses. And we don't see very many horses, and the population of horses has gone down dramatically.
I agree.
So it's not so much that, yeah, we won't need to work, but we'll also need to stop having kids. We're going to have to stop being, we can't have 7 billion people out of work.
Well, I don't know about that. I'll tell you the truth. In my opinion, it's mainly because of our politics structure and our economy structure. There is enough food for everybody, enough resources for everybody. Everybody can get at least one home. They can get meals every day. They can get as much electricity as they want if we cut off 70% of the workforce today, 80% of the workforce. Most things can be automated. I think we also build layers upon layers of work that is not really needed. Mm-hmm. It's not connected to reality anymore. Coming from marketing, for example, I know that marketing went through something that is very simple, like, okay, yeah, there is really is a good new product on the market. Let's say something that can cure you, but a lot of people don't know about it. And now it means the marketer, I'm going to come and tell you all about it. And then you can take it and you can cure yourself. Okay, awesome. It went from that to so many permutations and layers of marketing that are so complex that today you have a lot of people in marketing that don't even know at the end of the day the strategy of the product or why this product was created. They only know that they need to create an SEO article about something for $12. I think if we really wanted to be real, we would say, there's a lot of jobs that maybe humanity can do without. People can, I don't know, start living more spiritual lives, devoting themselves to building their essence and less about from the in out, more looking in, doing a lot of things we couldn't do before. I think that's where it's going to go, because it's not only bots online. We also see a big progress in robots mm-hmm. that are doing actual physical work instead mm-hmm. of people.
Communism didn't work. Ask anyone that lived in Russia and the Eastern Bloc. Yeah, they'll say communism didn't work.
Well, communism didn't work, but communism was about, okay, we're all going to chip in. Everybody will chip in as much as they can. Okay, you're a scientist. I'm just laborex. And we're going to kind of distribute the same. Should have distributed the same. So first off, they broke what they were supposed to do at the beginning.
They never got to true communism, let's be honest. Yeah. They got to the dictatorship of the proletariat. They never went any further.
Exactly. And even if they did, we're talking about a different revolution. We're talking about robots doing the work for us, no humans. And as soon as cold fusion is going to be something that we can use, nuclear fusion, then with a teaspoon of salt, you can energize London for a year, then you won't have an energy issue. Robots will just do anything that you need until they decide to kill us.
Well, I think the future is definitely, in some cases, scary because it's unknown. And, for people who are struggling to make ends meet, the transition period is very difficult. But it should be interesting to see what happens next. But, having companies like yourself that help agencies and freelancers and the gig economy continue to find opportunities and get work is very important.
Thank you. We are trying our best to help as many people as we can. We're a for-profit company, of course, but in our work, we really invest in everyone, trying to make them successful. It's not enough that you have access to the platform. You actually need to use it and sell to somebody. Putting a lot of emphasis in training our members how to prospect, helping them generate leads for them, helping them with the branding so they can grow.
For those agencies out there who are looking for sales and leads and a solution to those problems, where can they find you?
UmbrellaUS.com. They can go to our website, UmbrellaUS.com.
Thank you so much for joining me today on Brand Appeal, Inamar, and sharing with my audience about what it is that you do and talking about everything from being a business owner to what's the future of labor.
Thank you for having me, Shannon. I had a blast. Thank you.
Okay. I hope that that you enjoyed today's episode and that you learned something new. If you think there's somebody that you are, make sure that you share this episode with them. And if you share it on social media, don't forget to tag me. Now I learned a little bit and I've had a great conversation. Well, I'm talking a bit more about the future of the world. It really got me thinking because right now, as I look at the companies that I know, the small businesses, there are so many small businesses in the world that are having non-businesses. What they are, they're self-employed people who have gone out and through the gig economy have created jobs for themselves. But there is no security. Well, there's no security if they were employee either. But in Canada, we do have unemployment insurance. So if they get laid off, they have the unemployment insurance to keep going. But now, as self-employed people, in the gig economy, if the economy dries up or goes offshore, what happens is they're looking for them to no safety net. What happens? They end up living on savings. And then the savings dwindle. Who have fallen through the cracks and are just trying to get by. This, of course, happened as well when we offshored manual labor, and those people who could not.